Blog Talk Radio.
Again, this is a very hot topic, but before we get into
the discussion for this evening. I always like to let my listeners know why they're listening to the guests that they're hearing today, because we're always getting new listeners, and you know, there are people that may not know who Dr. Watkins is, but I guarantee you by the end of this show, you won't forget him. But let's start with your journey for a moment, Doctor. What actually brought you to holistic health? You know, they call it alternative medicine. You know, I don't really like that phrase, but you started off as a surgeon, but I don't want to tell your story. So if you don't mind, could you give our listeners a little background on what brought you to the work that you're doing now?
Well, first, what took me into surgery was there was a group of us guys that had made a pact while we were in medical school that we were going to go down south and work with our people and do what we call a self-supporting ministry. You know, we felt that it was very important that we combine the spiritual with health. And so we had been collaborating from my freshman year, really, in medical school. And it turned out that, you know, a couple of them were interested in doing internal medicine. And so I decided, okay, we'll need a surgeon. And so I went into surgery for the group. But I really did like it because, you know, it was, I guess I had a typical surgical personality. Mm-hmm. And I would rush in and take care of the problem. If
right.
there was a problem, you know, we didn't have to do a lot of talking. We just go in and deal with it. Mm-hmm. And but about my third year, I had arranged for us to really look at some property in Coosa County, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
It was situated. I was at the time I was doing a 3-month rotation at the Tuskegee VA Hospital in Tuskegee, Alabama. And I had been talking with some friends and planning for this, and there was this land that was sort of sitting in the middle of Birmingham, Montgomery, and Atlanta, Georgia. And so they came down, or at least one came down, and we looked at the property. We looked at – I'd done the work in terms of the Better Business Bureau, the schools, housing, everything. And as I was driving him home, I mean, driving him to the airport in Atlanta, he said, well Ted, I can't come. And I said, what do you mean you can't come? You made a commitment.
Right.
And it was funny because my wife had come down, and she was in the back seat, and the two of us were in the front seat, and we were talking and crying, and, you know. And I was crying because of this lost dream, and he was crying because his best friend didn't understand that
right.
he couldn't come. And as it turns out, later when I found out the reason, you know, I understood. But at the time, I didn't understand,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't pretty at all. So shortly after that, I started praying. I started asking God, you know, what is going on? What am I to do? You know, I mean, even though I enjoyed surgery, I had gone into surgery because of this group. And the Lord told me that he wanted me to leave surgery and go into alternative medicine. I said, no, you don't understand, Lord. I'm good with this knife.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and this knife made this little project boy feel very powerful. And so, but I kept really praying about it and looking at it for the next 2 years, and I finally decided to leave and go into alternative medicine. And I've not been disappointed in that decision. You know, I've maintained my contacts with my surgical colleagues, and we're still friends. I had one of my goals was to make sure that I maintained the respect of doctors that I respected. You know,
right. mm-hmm.
didn't respect all doctors, you know, but there are some very, very good doctors who are not in holistic medicine. I respected them, and I wanted them to respect me. And so that's really what got me into the area.
Well, after having been on the holistic side of medicine for Or is that an oxymoron? but having been treating people holistically for some time now, how have your surgical, ex-surgical colleagues been when it comes to seeing your work and your success as it relates to treating people and actually being able to hear your testimonies about how you can actually prevent and reverse certain diseases, if not all diseases, by, you know, adopting a holistic approach to treatment? How have they been in terms of just being receptive to, you know, new ideas or ideas that may have been foreign to them, because you actually had to actually, you know, hone up and study about holistic medicine. And, you know, supposedly many doctors don't have much training in nutrition when they're in residency or when they're in their studies. So how has it been in terms of their receptivity to your work?
Well, I don't know what they say when I'm not around. But, you know, I, for the most part, they have been very, very respectful and accepting and even encouraging, you know, of my work. I remember one of my colleagues, he was actually not in surgery, but he was in cardiology, and he was really a brilliant, brilliant cardiologist. And he was speaking over in Georgetown, and he asked me to come. And when I walked up, he introduced me to another guy, and he told him that I was basically the father of holistic medicine or something to that effect. And so, you know, the guy said, "Well, what's that?" And he explained to him my approach and so forth. And the guy said, "Well, you know, yeah, I do that." You know, he said, "No, you don't understand." He said, when nobody else was doing it, Ted was doing it, you know, and was very, very, very respectful of it. And a number of physicians are. But then there are others that are not. I've been called a quack by at least one doctor that I know. But it was funny because the doctor that said that was one of my professors, and he had been treating this lady for bleeding for about 2 years. You know, and I evaluated her and put her on a water fast, and in 2 days she stopped bleeding.
Wow.
And so he called me a quack. And the young lady was very, very, you know, disappointed in that and sad, you know, hurt. And I said, no, let's look at this thing. He treated you for 2 years and you bled. I treated you for 2 days and you stopped. Who's the quack? You know. So you know, there have been situations like that, but for the vast majority, you know, one of the greatest honors that I had was the chief of surgery, Dr. LaSalle D. LaFall. And for those who don't know Dr. LaFall, he was the chairman of the Department of Surgery for many, many years. He was the first black to be president of the American Cancer Society. He was the only black to be president of the American College of Surgeons. He wrote chapters in Sabatine and Schwartz, which is the two leading textbooks of surgery, you know. And he was approached by the Washingtonian Magazine. This was back in 86, so it was about three, four years after I had left surgery. And he was requested to recommend a physician that was an outstanding physician in our community. And instead of recommending the surgeon, he recommended me. And I was highly honored at that, because that meant that someone that I highly respected thought enough of what I was doing that he thought that it should be displayed throughout the community, and it was.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm very, again, very honored to have you as my special guest today and to have you as a regular on Health, Wealth, and Divine, because with the information that you're going to be bringing today to our listeners, and I just want to really make it clear, drive home the point to the listeners that you're listening to somebody today in Dr. Watkins, who is seeing both sides of the equation. He's seen the holistic side, which he practices now, and he's also seen the allopathic side, which God had him move away from. So it's very important that you understand that he is a medical doctor. And I think that oftentimes when people talk about alternative treatment, they feel that people that might not have the MD behind their name might not know what they're talking about, in spite of the fact you just mentioned about the young lady who came to you and was bleeding, and she had been treated for 2 years by someone who, quote, probably was respected and said to know what they were doing, but you treated her for 2 days.
In the medical school, you know. So mm-hmm. he was highly respected. And I respected him. You know, in his area, he was a good physician. You know, and one of the things, and you said it earlier, and I want to carry it home. What I practice is not alternative medicine. What I practice is holistic medicine. Mm-hmm. It is, and I spell it with a W H O L.
Hold.
You know, hold. And if you would go back and look in the old textbooks of medicine and surgery and so forth, you would find that many of the principles that I espouse were espoused by the mainstream physicians. It's just when the certain factions got more power that I think that they really need to have, that we start looking down on people eating a good diet or you know. And like I've had people say, well, you know, it doesn't matter what you eat. You know, that's ridiculous. You got cancer. You're going to tell me it doesn't matter what they eat? You know, mm-hmm. Don't you read the literature?
Mm-hmm. Probably not. Probably not. But, you know, again, speaking of cancer, we're going to be discussing cancer tonight. So I want everybody to, again, realize that, again, you're listening to a doctor, okay, Dr. Ted Watkins, MD. Very important that I stress that, again, because, again, people really put a lot of weight into that. And so I want to make sure that people know that when you're hearing Dr. Watkins talk about holistic health, he's still a doctor, okay? So we're going to be talking about cancer this afternoon. And so there has seemed to have been a rise. I mean, studies have shown that there has been a rise in cancer, and it's been said that cancer is going to soon surpass heart disease as the number one killer in America, and I don't want to take it for granted that anybody knows what cancer is, because people hear this phrase a lot. You know, somebody goes to the doctor and they come back and, you know, they're sad and, you know, they say the doctor ran every test and the doctor's saying, I got cancer. But the patient might not really know what that is. All they know is that they've had friends die from it, they've had loved ones die from it, you know, family members die from it. But actually what cancer is, the average person might not be able to tell you. So if we could start with that, so we can lay the foundation for this discussion. Doc, what is cancer? So, you know, we can educate the people today.
Well, cancer is an abnormal growth, all right? What we need to understand is that our bodies are very dynamic, and they're constantly... Cells are constantly dying and are being produced, and so old cells are going away and new cells are coming to take their place. And when the new cells come, they know where they should go, and they go there and they stay in their place, you know. but cancer cells, something happens, and in the regulatory mechanism, so that they don't stay where they belong, and they go and they extend beyond their boundaries. They get out of their place, if you please,
mm-hmm.
and they start growing abnormally, all right? And this abnormal growth, we call it a tumor, we call it a malignancy, we call it a lesion, but it's just an abnormal growth of cells, all right? Normal cells that have become abnormal. And I guess we can say that it really starts in the brain, in the nucleus of the cell, where there are changes in the DNA for whatever reason, environmental, genetic, you have it. There have been changes in the nucleus of the cell, and that determines this abnormal growth, and that determines how bad it's going to be, whether it's going to be mild, moderate, or severe. determined by how abnormal that nucleus is that regulates the growth of these cells.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is that abnormal blood vessels are formed, and they will encircle this tumor because it's growing faster than normal. It needs a lot of nutrition, so if you have a certain study, and where they inject dyes to try to find out about this tumor, they'll say that the tumor is enhanced. It's enhanced, which means that it has extra blood flowing to this area more than what normally is because of the rapid metabolic activity that's present in this tumor. And so that's what we generally are talking about when we talk about a cancer.
You know, cancer is something that it appears that when people go to the doctor, it just shows up in many different forms and different people. You know, we've had a guest on, as you know, Brother Coy Dunstan, whose mother was diagnosed with cancer in both breasts, her liver, and her colon. And then you have Dr. Lathan, who is a regular on this show, who was diagnosed with thyroid cancer, both of whom are, Coy cured his mother of cancer in both breast, the liver, and the colon by adopting a holistic lifestyle. Same with Dr. Lathan. The doctors almost laughed at her, and she ended up having the last laugh by changing her diet to a holistic diet and, got rid of the cancer. But it appears to show up in various places. Is there a particular reason why, for example, cancer might show up? Let's say, for example, you might take a family. Everybody's eating the same diet. All other things being equal, breathing the same air, getting the same amount of exercise, all of that. But some person might get cancer of the liver. Somebody else might get, lung cancer, whatever. Any particular reason why it shows up and manifests?
Some cancers are genetic. Some cancers, there's a genetic predisposition for certain cancers. You know, breast cancer can be a cancer like that. Prostate cancer, there can be a genetic predisposition. And other cancers, there can be a genetic predisposition. There are certain cancers that actually run in races,
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, one of the largest series of this polypoid cancer of the colon was followed by Dr. LaFall, the guy who was the chairman of the department who recommended me as one of the top doctors in D.C. You know, he they would get these polyps, and invariably they would turn to cancer. And so what they would do was if you start getting the polyps, they would take out the colon because
mm-hmm.
Otherwise it was going to just take over the colon. But in general, there are cancers like that, but then there are also cancers that are environmental. You know, people who smoke will tend to get cancers in certain places because of the toxins and so forth. People who are exposed to certain petroleum products. For instance, I know in Louisiana, I had a couple friends in Baton Rouge whose mothers died of pancreatic cancer. And this is at a time when pancreatic cancer was not nearly as prevalent as it is now. And it bothered me that these ladies in this small town, in this small church, who were both vegetarians, didn't drink, didn't smoke, none of that, would come out with pancreatic. So the second one, I actually went to the funeral. And as I drove into Baton Rouge, my nostrils were full of this petroleum. And I said, that's it. And it wasn't until some years later that I was on a panel with Dick Gregory and some others, and one guy was from Louisiana. And he indicated that they've now found that pancreatic cancer is associated with this high petroleum, because the petroleum is everywhere. It's in the water, it's in the air, it gets in all your food. It was leading to these high incidence of pancreatic cancer. There are other foods and different things that can promote cancers in different places. And so that's a factor that we have to understand. There's environmental, there's genetic, you know, those are the main areas that I would say.
Well, what would you attribute to the rise in cancer over the years, even not just the recent rise, but over the years? Like if you go back to like the 1950s, you know, you might read a study where they might have found X amount of thousands of cases of cancer or deaths related to cancer per year, and then fast forward a couple of decades, and then now you're in the 70s, and you find that number has risen. Then you fast forward some more, and you find that now, I mean, it's like off the chain. What would you attribute the rise in these incidences of cancer to?
Well, I think that there's several factors. One of them certainly is our skills for looking for the cancer is increasing. And so we can pick up the cancers, we can pick them earlier, and we can pick up more. So that's one of the factors. But then we have to look at that our diets has certainly changed. Not only are we eating more of the fatty foods, the protein-based foods, the meat-based foods, but we're also eating more genetically modified foods. You know, we're eating foods with all kind of chemicals in them. And so that's a major factor. And then I believe that our immune systems are being weakened by a number of factors. One is stress. You know, we're in a very stressful environment. And what I find is people are unhappy. Man, people, the Bible says that a merry heart does good like a medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And people are not happy.
So
as a result, their bodies are affected by this. And when you keep bombarding your system by these negative energies, negative food, negative environment, depressed immune system, and the list goes on and on,
then,
you know, all the sugar in our diets and so forth, which further goes to depress the immune system, you know. So these are some of the reasons that we are just inundated by cancer.
I want to give everybody an opportunity. If you're listening by phone, all you have to do is press 1, and I can bring you on board, and you can ask your question. If you're listening online, please call in at 347-324-5727. That's 347-324-5727. Doc, I got a question for you, and this question would be more, I guess, geared toward the females, ladies, queens. Mammograms, what are your thoughts on mammograms? Are you a proponent of mammograms, yes or no? Because I've done some research and found that there are some dangerous side effects of women who actually have mammograms, that the, I guess, radiation or whatever it is that they use when performing the mammogram actually is very, very harmful to the patient. Could you speak on mammograms and whether you are a proponent or not?
Yeah, I think that it's a two-edged sword. There's a test called a thermogram, which is a test using heat, and it shows up lesions. It's just as sensitive as mammograms. It does not have it doesn't have the known side effects, and I have to say it that way because whenever a test becomes popular, people look at it more and it's scrutinized more. And so they're not as the known side effects to thermograms as they are with mammograms. And so I certainly would if that was available to you, and insurances will even pay for them if they're available, if that's available to you, I would certainly recommend that over the mammogram. But if you did not have that, I think the careful, judicious use of mammograms can be very, very helpful in saving people's lives, because you can pick up a tumor at an earlier stage. It's clear that you can. And if you pick it up earlier, then you can institute the appropriate treatment, which is not necessarily surgery, radiation, or chemo. But you can institute the correct treatment and clearly save these people's lives. And so, yes, I would recommend a mammogram for my patients, especially if they couldn't get a thermogram, but I would do it in a judicious manner, you know, meaning that you don't have to have them every year, you know, and there are actually guidelines for the recommendation of mammograms.
I think that's important to note that you just mentioned that you don't have to have them every year, because every year, you know, around a particular time, you're going to start seeing, women are going to start seeing and hearing information, did you get your mammogram yet? Did you get your mammogram yet? And people are going to be like, yeah, I got mine, or I'm on the way, I'm getting mine tomorrow. I got one scheduled for next week. I mean, like, and not even consider that there could be possibly another way to actually detect whether or not you are, you know, cancer-free, or whether you need treatment. And if you could talk about some holistic ways to treat cancer. Now, I know the diet is one, but would there be a different holistic approach to one particular cancer over another particular cancer, or would it be the same treatment, say, for breast cancer as well as cancer of the liver or cancer of the colon? Or, you know, would there be a different approach, or, you know, since it's cancer we're talking about, would the approach be the same?
Well, the approach would be similar. For instance, the diet would basically be the same. You want a low-fat, low-protein, high unrefined carbohydrate diet. You want a diet that stresses raw foods, you know, a lot of juicing, et cetera. So that is pretty standard for most cancers. There are other things that are also standard, you know, decreasing stress. And I put stress over diet when it comes to treating stress reduction over diet when it comes to treating cancer. Because I believe that stress is, you know, I've looked at my patient load and I found that over the years, and I've treated, you know, hundreds if not thousands of patients with cancer, and I found that invariably stress is always present, significant stress, for at least 2 years prior to the onset of the cancer. And I tell my patients, if stress can help bring it on, removing stress can help get rid of it. So it's critically important to do that. And I really try to give them ways in which they can do that. One of which is certainly taking your burdens to the Lord and leaving them there. It's easy to say it, but it's hard to do it, because we want to be in control of these messy lives, and that becomes a real problem. But yes, that diet is important. Then, you know, if it's a palpable lesion, in other words, if you can feel it, it's something that's you know, you can touch, the breast cancer, some cancers in the skin, etc. Then I use certain things like garlic poultices and different kind of poultices to kill the tumors and to bring out toxins and so forth. And so it really depends on where the tumor is to some degree. Yes, I would say that.
Well, what if, and I know I'm just looking at the board, and so I don't know who has what, or, you know, or if anybody that's listening actually has cancer or knows somebody that has cancer, but let's say we're talking cervical cancer here. Okay, let's say someone has been diagnosed with cervical cancer, and they just don't know what to do. They go to the doctor, and the doctor says, look, you know, we really need to jump on this right now. We're recommending that you do radiation or, you know, chemotherapy. And the patient doesn't know. I mean, they assume that the doctors know what the doctors think they know what they're talking about. And in the absence of information to suggest or even testimonies to support holistic medicine, then the patient is at a loss. Like, well, the doctor said I should do this. So when somebody comes and says, well, listen, you know, I know this doctor. His name is Dr. Ted Watkins. I mean, he's treated people, you know, hundreds if not thousands of people with cancer, and you need to give him a call. Oftentimes people might be met with skepticism. So, you know, let's just look at cervical cancer for a second. How would you, I don't want to use the word convince, but I guess approach an individual who, let's say, has cervical cancer and wanting to, you know, share information with them that they might not have heard before, because that can be challenging at times too when you're talking to people that.
Okay, so I guess I've changed over the years, all right? And I used to try to almost make people well, but now I don't. I'm now looking for people who want to be well. Mm-hmm. And if they're interested in information, I can give them information, or I can give them sources where they can do their own research, you know. Because, see, if the patient is ignorant of what's happening, you know, if they don't know the rates of death in treated patients, standard treated patients, you know, then they're going to minimize what I say, and it becomes really a waste of time. And because there's so many people out there who are sick who want to get well, I don't want to waste my time on people like that. So, but if they're sincere and they just don't know and they want information, then I will talk to them and give them information about the cancers, the options. And once again, I don't try to force a person to do alternative or just do alternative. If they want to do chemo and radiation in addition to alternative, I tell them, go ahead and do it. You know, I tell them I don't think I would do it if I was in that position. I said, but I'm not in that position.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I can't honestly tell you what I would do because I'm not in that position, and that stress is not on me, you know. But based on what I see and what I've experienced, I believe it's possible to treat these cancers and reverse it without these things. And so that's sort of how I do it. I said, you know, you're welcome to talk to some of my patients if you like. You know, there are some things I can give you to read. Some very, very astute people have done a lot of research, and there's a lot of research to let you know that in general you can't get a person well unless you change their thinking and their lifestyle.
You know, Dick Gregory said something one time, and that was, he mentioned that, he said, if I'm in a hotel and I get a phone call from somebody that I know, somebody that I trust, and that person tells me, Dick, you need to get out of the hotel because at 11 o'clock tonight, the hotel is going to blow up. He said, now, if 10:55 comes and I'm still in the hotel, and then 11 o'clock comes and I'm still in the hotel, and then the hotel blows up, he said, when people go back and say, well, how did Dick Gregory die? They're going to say, well, he got blown up in a hotel. He said, that's not the reason why I died. He said, the reason why I died is that I didn't listen when
right,
I got the warning.
Right.
You
right,
know?
Right.
And so
right.
This show is a warning to somebody. Okay, it's not, we're not trying to beat you over the head, but this show is a warning to somebody that the body doesn't care. You know, the body doesn't care what your faith is. The body doesn't care what you believe. An apple is going to do what an apple does. If you eat an apple, it's going to provide whatever nutrients an apple provides to the body, whether you're an atheist, whether you're a Buddhist, Hindu, Christian, Muslim, whatever you are. An orange is going to do what an orange is supposed to do nutritionally to the body. So, you know, I just want to stress that because there are a lot of people, well-meaning people. There are people, I believe in prayer, but I know that there, I know a lot of people that prayed and are dead now. And, you know, they believed in God. I mean, they trusted the Lord. I mean, but they're no longer with
faith God. Without works is dead, the Bible says.
That's correct.
You know, and in fact, I tell people that, because I went to church school from first grade all the way up through college, up through and through college. My first time being in a non-church school was when I went to medical school, you know, full-time, was when I went to medical school. And so I believe in the spiritual approach. And I've studied Christ and his miracles and so forth. And what I found was that that all of his miracles were preceded, well, just about all of them, were preceded by the person having to do something first before they got their healing, you know. In other words, Christ didn't heal people just because they needed to be healed. They had to take up their bed and walk. They had to go through the pool of Siloam and wash. They had to reach out and touch the hem of his garment. They had to do something to demonstrate that they really wanted to be healed. And so I think the same principle is when we have a cancer or a heart disease or anything, we have to be willing to do what we can do. That shows that we really want to be well. See, we can say we want to be well, but your actions speak so loud, I can't hear a word you got to say.
Woo! Priest doctor. Everybody, my special guest is Dr. Ted Watkins, MD. He's a medical doctor, and I am so thankful to have somebody of your stature, my brother, on the show to help to spread this information of holistic health, because it is so, so very necessary. Let's talk about biopsies for a moment. You know, are you a proponent of biopsies? I mean, there are people who, I'm sure that's one of the stages
I'm
in which...
Definitely, I may differ from a lot of people in holistic medicine because, number one, I am a physician, and I don't apologize for it.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I believe in biopsies because you can have a tumor and it not be cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody needs to eat right. But if you have a cancer, there are some things that you need to do that the average person doesn't need to do. You know, for instance, I put my cancer patients on 13 glasses of fresh juice a day. Well, you don't need to drink 13 glasses of fresh juice a day, you know. Yes, you need, I would recommend that you have juice every day. But you don't need that quantity. But because cancer is a hypermetabolic disease, if you have it, we need to really hit this thing with a sledgehammer.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have it, we don't. And you don't know that you have it unless you get a piece of tissue. You can't look at it and tell that it's cancer because there are things that are not cancer that you know, I mean, when it gets to a certain point, But you don't want to get to that point,
mm-hmm.
you know, when it's become very obvious. So you need to, you feel a mass in the breast, for instance. You don't know if that mass is malignant or cancerous, I mean, or benign, unless you take a piece of it. And so I am in favor of biopsy. And where possible, I like what we call an excisional biopsy, where you go and if you're able, you take the whole thing out, and you look at it under the microscope, and you determine whether or not it's a cancer. And if it is, then you still need to go and hit that diet, and you need to hit it hard because cancer, when you see, especially things like breast cancer, prostate cancer, when you see the cancer in the prostate or when you see the cancer in the breast, it has already spread throughout the body. All right? It's already spread. I never forget. I was in when I was still in surgery. I was in. We had on Mondays. we had rounds, what we call rounds, surgical rounds. And Dr. LaFall, at the time, he was the president of the American Cancer Society. He came in and he said, "Men," you know, that's the way he addressed, even though there was ladies there. "Men," old school, you know.
Right.
He said, "It appears that our surgery may not be doing what we thought it was doing in respect to breast cancer." He said, "Because it appears the research is showing that our surgery is not really extending the life of the patient. But what's happening is we're diagnosing the patient earlier and follow them longer, but not really extending their life." He said, "Because these cancers are a microcellular disease, meaning that when we see the tumor has already spread." All right? The other aspect of that is that because cancer, I say it is a breakdown of the immune system, the cancer can spread only if the body's immune system allows it to spread. Because the immune system recognizes cancer as non-self, as a foreign invader under normal circumstances, and will kill it and not allow it to grow, and certainly not allow it to spread. But if the immune system is weakened because of stress, because of lack of diet, because of lack of exercise, etc., you know, because of environmental factors, then those cancers are allowed to spread throughout the body and, and can pop up in other places. You know, and so we have to have a strong immune system. And if you have a cancer, then that means, hey, we gotta build your immune system up because your immune system is weak. And if we don't build this immune system up, I don't care what you do, you're not going to be able to recover from this cancer.
What would you prescribe for people who need to build the immune system up? And let's say there's somebody listening saying, "Okay, well, you know, I just got the word, you know, I need to get this immune system built up. No exercise is part of it. Of course, you don't want to eat foods that are going to debilitate, you know, or tear down your immune system. But what about the role of...
But you also want to eat foods
yes.
that's going to build up your immune system.
Yes.
And I tell my patients to laugh. I tell them to laugh. A merry heart does good just like a medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell them to laugh and not allow themselves to be stressed. Don't let anything stress them, you know, because I don't care what you do in terms of your diet and so forth. If you don't deal with the stress, you're not going to deal with the cancer. And so I tell them to do that. I tell them to exercise, because exercise has been shown to build the immune system. And so you got to do that. You know, and then, you know, there are other foods and so forth that I would recommend that they eat, you know, that can build the immune system. And, you know, so I would recommend, I recommend the other foods, you know, there are things like hydrogen peroxide. You know, I just think hydrogen peroxide is such a fantastic thing, food grade hydrogen peroxide, and I recommend that for patients who have cancer. You know,
and how would they use it?
Well, they use it in drops. I have them take, you know, I start off if they have mild cancer, I have them take 3 drops. You know, you know, 3 times a day in 5 ounces of water, and then build up to 4 drops. And I have a whole protocol that a dose schedule that I give them, and they build up. You know, if they have more advanced cancer, you know, then I would start off with a higher dose, you know, because they need to hit this thing, they need to hit it hard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I would start off with a higher dose and build them up, you know. But you gotta build up that immune system. So that's what I do with that. And then there are other things. There are different herbs that they would take. There are different other products that I find to be very, very helpful in helping to build the immune system and helping to get people to be able to fight off these cancers, you know. So we do that.
Well, let's say, you know, we talked about exercise for a moment, but let's stay there for a second because I think a lot of people minimize exercise. But as you get older, you know, there's going to be, you know, the need to exercise more, the need to get the muscles moving, the lymphatic system moving. I mean, you got to move, you know, because when you are young, you got recess. You know, children, they're going out, you know, I guess they still have recess in school where they go out on the playground and get on the
I guess.
They still have recess anymore. But, you know, when they go out and they play and run and jump and get on the bars and, you know, do all of those things. And many people haven't exercised since high school, you know. So if you could just stress the importance of exercise, because that's something that you can do in your own home. You don't have to go to a gym to exercise. You can stretch, you can do sit-ups, you can do push-ups, you can do certain things at home and not have to actually go out and join a world's gym or anything like that. You can walk. So if you could just talk about the importance of exercise.
Well, I've certainly recommended exercise for many, many years for my patients with cancer. And I remember one time I was talking to one of my friends over at Howard. He's an exercise physiologist. And I tell people he's one of the smartest country boys I know. You know, he's from North Carolina, but he is so brilliant, you know. And he said, Watkins, you did it. I said, what? He said, you've been recommending that people exercise to build the immune system for years. I said, yeah, they need to do it. He said, but the literature just came out. that moderate exercise stimulates the T cells, all right? But no exercise or exhaustive exercise, too much exercise, depresses the T cells, all right? And so we have to exercise, but we have to exercise in moderation, you know, not too much, not too little. You know,
okay.
But we need to do it consistently, and so that's what it does. And aerobic exercise as well as some resistance training is important.
Mm.
You know, stretching is important. All of those things are important. Now, stretches may not be as important for the immune system, but and perhaps it is. You know, because and Tai Chi and so forth, they do a lot of stretching. Exercise, yoga. They do a lot of stretching exercises. So and that seems to build the immune system. But no, exercise is very, very important. And it increases the amount of oxygen in the blood, you know, because you're breathing deeper. It helps to get rid of some of the poisons because you sweat. And when you sweat, you get rid of poisons from your system through the skin. It helps you to breathe deeper. You know, I mean, it's amazing. People don't breathe. People don't breathe deep, man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I listen to a person's lung. I have to, could you please breathe deep? I mean, breathe deep. Sir, could you breathe deep for me? Take a deep breath.
Yes,
you know,
sir.
So it has many, many advantages. Your metabolism becomes more effective and efficient when you exercise, and so you get rid of excess weight when you exercise. You know, you relieve stress when you exercise. Must I keep going?
No, I think you hit it.
you understand what I'm saying? And so exercise is, I actually believe now that from a health perspective, stress reduction is number one. exercise is number two, and nutrition is number three.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Now that's deep. That's deep.
I didn't always think that way. Because I certainly thought nutrition was number one.
Now, that's not to minimize nutrition, everybody.
No. I still spend probably more time talking about nutrition than I do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of the reasons is our psychological and emotional attachment to food.
Yeah, true. Mama made the best, macaroni and cheese.
Oh, yeah. I was telling one of my patients yesterday or today that my mama used to make some lamb chops, man, you want to smack somebody for.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I no longer have the desire. Matter of fact, they are repugnant to me now.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I used to love me some lamb chops. You know?
Yes, sir. And I remember in a past interview you mentioned to me that you were a Lito's man too, and that struck home.
Oh,
and that struck a chord with me. Because I was like,
Lito,
my wife and I looked at each other when you said that. He was like pointing at me like, yeah, that was you.
Oh yeah, no question. You know,
mm-hmm.
And sugar, man. I would go to my wife and I would go visit our friends. We used to go to New York all the time. Her best friend was in New York, and her husband was one of the most outstanding guys I've ever known, and we just had an affinity for one another. We would go up there, man, you know when I come, they're going to have the right kind of strawberry preserves. Don't give me no cheap strawberry preserves. I want the real deal. And I loved sugar. Well, sugar depresses the immune system, you know. But I didn't realize it at the time, and I would eat my sugar big time. Well, I don't eat sugar like that anymore, you know. I actually went to a weight loss class with my skinny self to learn how to get off sugar. So you have to do what's necessary to achieve what you need to achieve so that you can get well.
You know,
and stay well.
I know that there's somebody out there listening that got a sugar addiction, and Doctor, I concur with you because I've been there myself. And it once you get off of it, though, you really won't miss it. I mean, because I was a person that just put more than a healthy amount of sugar in coffee, you know, and tea and stuff. But once I stopped it, I mean, I started using other things, but I didn't miss it. I mean, I realized I woke up one day and I was like, man, I haven't had any sugar in 6 months, you know, and it didn't dawn on me that I had actually kicked the sugar habit, and so I'm here as a witness, I mean, because I know, and thank God every time I went to the doctor, you know, my sugar levels were fine, but I was always afraid, you know,
I didn't know how sugar was impacting me.
Mm-hmm.
I got off sugar just because I knew that, you know, sugar was not the healthiest thing for you. But I didn't know that it had already started impacting me. So I went to this weight loss class. They taught me how to, instead of using this commercial processed sugar, to use natural sweeteners. Use things like dates, raisins,
mm-hmm.
you know, figs, those kinds of things. And I would cut them up in my cereal because I used to eat four or five bowls of cereal today, man. I just love cereal, you know, that dry cereal. And so I started cutting up those dates and raisins and, you know, and putting those things in my cereal instead. And I woke up one morning and I said, wait a minute. I was at Tuskegee, was doing that rotation at Tuskegee. So it accomplished more than just helping me to find land. I woke up and said, wait a minute, I don't have a headache.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I didn't have a headache yesterday.
Right.
You know, getting off the sugar got rid of the headaches. When I would go to surgery, I would have to wear special gloves because my hands would itch so bad if I wore a latex glove. The powder in there just would make me itch. I'd have to put things in my mask because I couldn't just breathe in the regular mask because I would itch so, and I'd have to break scrub, we call it, break scrub, come out of the surgery, take off the gloves and so forth, wash my hands, you know, go through that process again, put on new gloves. Otherwise, you know, I'd be itching so bad. But when I got off of sugar, all that went away. All that went away.
Isn't it amazing when you think about just how easy, when you quote, end quote, to actually make small changes that can have such a big impact on your life? I mean, just the eliminating sugar or cutting back on sugar, the headaches were gone. I mean, the itching stopped.
I had headaches every day, brother, every day. And these were headaches that would get your attention.
Mm. Well, doctor, let's talk about stages for a moment. Anytime, you know, you're having a conversation about cancer, you hear people say, you know, so-and-so's got stage 4 cancer or stage 3 cancer. What actually are the stages of cancer, and what actually is the cause of one cancer moving from one stage to the next? How many stages are there of cancer? I mean, is there a stage after 4?
For the most part, cancer is at 4 stages. They've sort of, in cancer, the nomenclature of cancer has gone through some change. But the first stage is something we call cancer in situ. Cancer in situ, meaning that you look at the cell under the microscope, and there are some changes that are occurring in the nucleus of the cell, but it hasn't gone anywhere else. There are just some little changes in the nucleus of the cell, and we call this cancer in situ. We often see it in the breast, you know. When you catch it early, you know, that mammogram, you may see a little area that is. It's like a rash or something, and you think that it's abnormal, and you go and do a biopsy, and you see the cells, and you say it's cancer in situ. And then the other labeling is dependent upon the growth and spread of the cancer, you know. And so, you know, if the cancer is contained, you'd say it's in situ or stage 1. If the cancer, let me go back. The size of the cancer can also determine. As a certain size, you go from stage 1 to stage 2. And then when the cancer starts spreading, local spread, stage 3, and then distant spread, that's stage 4, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's generally how we you know. So if you have prostate cancer and it's contained within the prostate, then that's fine. It's 1 or 2. You know, if it gets outside of you know, there may be a boundary within the prostate. If it gets outside that boundary, then we go into stage 3. If it goes to the liver or to the brain or to the bone, you know, some of the places that prostate cancer travels, then that's stage 4, regardless of what size it is.
So yeah. When reversing cancer, then, is that the way that it reverses? Does it go back? Like, for example, you take somebody that's got stage 4 cancer, and then they start doing all of the changes that we've spoken about in this show today, and they start seeing success. And they start going back to the doctor. I mean, is it going to go from stage 4 to stage 3 to stage 2 to stage 1? Is that how it's going to heal?
Basically, yeah. I would have to say yes. I've never really, to be honest, I never really thought about it that way. But
mm-hmm.
but yeah, it's not, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day, but it was built. And so, you know, if the tumor starts getting smaller, you know, the distant spread start going away. All this is an indication that the person's getting better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are no more tumor growths. You know, sometimes when the tumor stops growing, that's a sign of improvement. Because if the tumor has been growing every month, your tumor is getting larger, and then you get on a treatment regimen and your tumor stops growing, well, that's progress.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yes, sir.
And then the tumor starts shrinking in size. That's progress. It may still be there, but it's not as big. You know, the distant spread disappears. That's progress. And so that's how I monitor my patients, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, doctor, let's talk about, if we could, misdiagnosis for a moment, because I was speaking with, I forget who it was I was interviewing, and they were sharing that approximately half of all physicians' diagnoses are false, and that patients are being prescribed medication for these false diagnoses and actually having side effects to the medication that was prescribed to them for this false diagnosis. And so they actually end up with something because of the side effects for being prescribed to them for something that they never had.
I think we're dealing with two different things. All right. There certainly are some misdiagnoses and some false diagnoses, you know, but with many of the tools that we have today, it's easier to make a diagnosis. And so, physicians should not be making bad diagnoses as often as we once were, when we didn't have the MRI, the CAT scan, the various scopes and so forth, to be able to make a diagnosis. But then the side effects of the medicine, that's a totally different subject, at least in my thinking, you know, because you can make the correct diagnosis and treat with, quote, the correct medicine, but that medicine is fraught with side effects, and so, you know, that could be a real problem.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm sorry. So that could be a real problem that you have, and so it's important that. You know, I was talking to one of my colleagues yesterday. I called him about one of my patients because the doctor had put them on this blood thinner that also was supposed to be effective with atrial fibrillation. But there was so many side effects to the medicine. The doctor, he was past chief of cardiovascular surgery at Howard, so he's a very, very esteemed doctor. He said, "Man, I'm scared of that medicine. That medicine has so many side effects.
He better be.
Know, that I'm scared to put my patients on that medicine."
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, whereas another doctor was very content to put the patient on the medication and then just treat the side effects. So, medicines have side effects. Sometimes what you have to do is weigh the risk versus the benefit.
That's scary to me. What you just said scared me, man. You know, that the doctor would put them on the medication knowing the side effects and be content to treat them for the side effects.
It's because the doctor has weighed the risk versus the benefit. All right? This particular patient had when he had his heart attack, he tells me that he arrested three times in the ambulance, and then another time when he got to the hospital. So this brother has already had four of his nine lives.
Mm.
You understand what I'm saying? And
yeah.
So he was critically ill, and you know, you have to make determinations, you know. And so he came to me because he wanted to get off some of these medicines.
I don't blame
him. Some of those medicines helped to keep him alive. All right, and so I don't go around snatching patients off medicine. You know. I tell patients, not taking medicine is not a treatment plan. You gotta show me that you're gonna get on your diet, you're gonna stay on your diet, you're gonna get on your exercise program, and you're gonna stay on your exercise program, and that you starting to get results, and then I start cutting back on your medication.
Well, what would you say to somebody? Let's say you take somebody that's got high blood pressure, and the doctor said, "Well, you're gonna have to take this for the rest of your life, or whatever," and they're tired of it. You know, they're like, "I don't want to do this for the rest of my life." You know, I've listened to Health, Wealth, and Divine. I heard Jawanza interviewing Dr. Watkins, and you know, it made me decide.
It depends on how high their blood pressure is.
Okay, because
if they have very mild blood pressure, and they're willing to change. You know, then we could get them off the medicine and go ahead and put them on a program that will lower the blood pressure. I mean, I can put you on a raw juicing program if you have mild hypertension, even moderate hypertension. And 2-3 weeks, I can have your pressure normal.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put you on a diet that will maintain it there, and it's no problem. But if you got pressures 200 over 120, 130, and I've seen this, and you've had it for a time, and you're not taking you're not juicing, you're not exercising, you're not doing the things, you're still highly stressed, I would say, man, you better take them drugs until you're ready to change. You understand?
Yeah, I feel you.
You see,
I feel you.
It's not enough to say, "I don't want to take medicine." You have to be willing to say what you are willing to do so that your body no longer even needs to think about taking any medicine.
You know what, you raise a very good point, Doctor, because I think, and I guess I've taken for granted, that the people that listen to this show, you know, it's Health, Wealth, and Divine. We talk about spirituality. We talk about, you know, health. We talk about, you know, a lot of different things. I've always assumed that the people that tune into this show are ready to make
let me help you. The vast majority of people who listen to this show are not ready. They're more ready than the average person. But most people don't want to change.
Mm.
Or they want to change but seem to be incapable of changing. You know, I remember I prayed, and I tell you what, I wasn't praying for an answer. I was frustrated, and I said, "Lord, why do these people want to die?" Now, these are folk who are coming to me, just like folk who listen to the show,
mm-hmm.
but even more, because they don't have to pay to listen to this show. They had to pay to come to me because many of the insurances we don't take, so they got to come out their pocket with cash. And come
mm-hmm.
to me, and
right.
still wouldn't do what I tell them to do. I said, "Why do these rascals want to die?" And the Lord told me they don't want to die. Then why would they change? I mean, I'm upset. Why would they change? They don't change because they can't change. Can an Ethiopian change his skin? A leopard in spots? Neither can someone who's doing evil do good. So, Lord, they just supposed to die by beholding we become changed. Look here. Let me tell you. People listening to this program got stuff going on in their lives. Stuff that they don't even understand, and it's caused them stress that they don't even know they have.
mm-hmm.
All right,
mm-hmm.
And so they're behaving, they're thinking, they're feeling, they don't even understand it. You know, they don't even think they are stressed. I remember one guy I told him, you know, "What's your stress?" "Oh, I don't have any stress, doctor." I said, "I mean, fine." I said, "This stress comes from your spouse, your children, your boss, your finance." He said, "Oh, I got all those. Plus, I'm in school." You
mm-hmm.
know, I mean, but at first blush, he didn't even think he was stressed. All right. So
mm-hmm.
what happens is we have these issues that are going on down deep inside of us that needs to get resolved. And they are impacting us greatly, whether we like it or not. We got to be willing to do something about these things.
Doc, I put out the invitation and somebody's responded. Somebody wants to talk to you. You ready?
All right.
All right. I'm going to say the last four digits of your number, 4356.
How are you all?
You are on the air with Dr. Watkins. Welcome to Health, Wealth, and Divine.
Thank you. This is Renee. How are you all this evening?
Hey, Queen
Ray.
I just wanted to ask a question with regards to exposure to asbestos. Is that related or associated with a certain type of cancer?
Yes, it can be associated with, especially lung cancer.
Right.
But asbestos in general will decrease the immune system also. But it's actually associated with a specific type of lung cancer, the asbestos
mm-hmm.
is. You know, because it goes in and irritates the little fibers, irritate the lung, and the lung responds to that and produces a specific cancer. So, but because it has also an effect on the immune system, it can affect other cancers other than just the lung.
Back in the 70s, 80s, the building we worked in was a very old building, and they had a removal of asbestos. And there was a significant number of people who worked with us who ended up getting cancer, but they were such a variant kind of cancers, you know. It just ran the whole gamut. And it got to the point that we thought we were in a sick building because every time you turned around, somebody was dying from cancer. But like I said, there were so many different types of cancers that it was hard to just say that that was really a sick building. But we didn't want to just dismiss it as such.
A cancer is the number two cause, and the study that was referred to at the beginning, in some states, it's the number one cause of death in this country. And so cancer is quite prevalent already, but the exposure to the asbestos just makes it even more prevalent. And so I not knowing the details, I can't say much more than that on it. But asbestos clearly can contribute to the production of cancer.
Right. And that's where we were. We kind of figured like it was just too big of a monster to attack because of it was just too many variables and then by that time cancer was just so prevalent in the general population, period, I call it, you know, just with life and everybody. It was like the common cold. Everybody was getting cancer, so it was like something is wrong, you know, but we couldn't pinpoint it. And that was always one of the questions.
Yes, yes, most definitely.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much, Queen Renee. Thank you for tuning in. Well, Doc, let me ask you a question about the disparity when it comes to African-Americans and other races as it relates to cancer rates. Excuse me. Was reading how African Americans basically are at the top of the list when it comes to the various cancers, from prostate cancer to, you know, just all of the different kinds of cancers. It appeared that we were on the top of the list. What are your thoughts on why that might be?
Well, first of all, it's not just cancer that we're on the top of the list. Margaret Heckler, when Reagan was the president, did a study on minority health, and blacks were number one in just about every cause of death except cirrhosis of the liver, and we were number two in that, second to Indians, because they drank more than we did. You know, clearly I believe it is not genetic. I believe it is environmental. And another factor is of course the stress. One study suggested, for instance, prostate cancer. The reason black men have so much prostate cancer is not because they don't have access to medical care or their diets are so bad, even though those are clearly factors, they felt that the number one cause was the stress.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a factor. Our diets are a factor. You know, the environment, we tend to, or let me put it this way, the communities that we tend to grow up in are much more likely to have negative environmental things in them, whether it's the asbestos, whether it's lead, you know,
mm-hmm.
whether it's electrical wiring, you know, high voltage electrical wiring in the community. You know, there's so many, many environmental toxins that are available that tend to affect us. And
living
so
near
toxic. I'm sorry?
Living near toxic waste dumps.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things negatively impact us, and we must be aware of it.
Everybody, we've got a few more minutes left in the show. So if you have another question or you'd like to, you know, make a comment with Dr. Watkins, please don't be shy. All you have to do is just press 1 and I can bring you on board. You know, this show is just very, very important, Doc. I mean, we've covered a lot, and I know, you know, we can't cover it all in a short period of time. But now let's talk about the cure, okay? You know, somebody out there needs hope. Somebody out there has got or know somebody that got a bad report, and they've been praying, they've been asking God, what do I do? And, you know, I say that you didn't come across this show by accident. You know, there was a reason. We're here talking about, and you're here listening. So it wasn't an accident. Your spirit brought you here. You're here on purpose. So, Doc, what would you say to somebody, they got a bad report, and they heard this show, and they're like, you know, I want to make some changes, and I'm going to share your information with them, how they can get in contact with you, because there's somebody I know that wants to talk to you. There's somebody out there that says, I got to speak to that brother. So let's do that now. Doc, how can people reach you if they, you know, heard this show, they want to talk, they want some answers, and they want to connect with you? How can they do that?
They can give my office a call. It's area code 202-388-0992. That's 202-388-0992. Well, first of all, you mentioned cure. I never tell people I cure anything because that's not my job. That's God's job. But what God has done, I believe, has taught me some things that seem to be very effective in helping people to get well from cancer. And we've been fortunate, all kinds of cancers, pancreatic cancer, colon cancer, you know, lung cancer, breast cancer, prostate, all, you name it. God has blessed us to have successfully treated it. And we've basically already told what we do.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first things I do is I focus on building their self-esteem, decreasing the stress, get them to focus on what is exciting about their lives or what they want to be excited about their lives and believing that they can have it. So that first phase is the psychological emotional phase, you know, helping them to change the way they think. Because sometimes we are always blaming other people for our problems.
Yes, sir.
And don't realize that the other person may be doing something to us, but we're the ones that's really responsible. Till we take responsibility, we're going to keep on having a problem. So I do all that. I get them on a good exercise program. I really focus on raw with my cancer patients. And I did that because I was exposed by a friend in my church to George Malcolmus, a video. And then I read his book, you know, Why Christians Get Cancer. And what was the other one? God's Way to Ultimate Healing. I read those two books, and it really blew my mind. And I laugh. I said, you know, I don't say that I cure anybody, but my patients just don't die.
I love it. I love it. I'll take that.
And after I started really pushing the raw, it just had a profound effect. Now, some people would grimace when I talk about raw. I ain't going to him. Well, you want to come to me, one, because my philosophy is that food is supposed to taste good. You know? Food's supposed to taste good. And just because it's good for you don't mean it can't be good to you. You know?
Amen. Mm-hmm.
God gave us taste buds because he wanted us to enjoy our food. And so we've tried to partner up with people who can help to make the food taste good. And we go from, and that's how we approach it.
Mm-hmm. Everybody, I want to just take a moment to just first thank you so much for tuning in, because this could be the answer to somebody's prayer. But, and I'm going to ask Dr. Speak on this, in order for the prayer to work, there's going to be something that you have to do. You know, like Dr. said earlier in the show, faith without works is dead. Again, you're not here by accident. You're hearing this information on purpose. So either you or someone you know needs this information. But Doc, you said something real powerful, and it could shock a lot of people because of just the directness of the statement that you made, which was that there a lot of people just don't want to change, you know. And, you know, I know we're all, you know, believe in prayer and believe in healing, and we want the people to, I saw something on, you know, on the internet that somebody was praying for a cure for cancer. So I guess people are waiting for the pill to come out, you know. But could you just talk about change for a moment longer and the importance of it if you're going to get the desired results? Yes, you're going to have to exercise. Yes.
I now believe that people really do want to change. They want to live. The problem is that they don't believe that they can.
Okay.
Their faith is weak. All right. And so people have to have a stronger faith. Now, what was that you wanted me to comment on?
Just change. Just the need for
change is hard.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have to let go what we're familiar with. It's like that lady whose husband beats her only on Friday night. He comes home drunk and beats her up. But it's only on Friday. The rest of the days he doesn't bother. She don't like the beating, but she don't want to leave because she don't know what she's going to get into outside. Here she at least knows that the beating is only going to be on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's a dramatic example. But that's the way we are. We've been beat up. I mean, people who are doing traditional medicine are not doing great. They can't say, I mean, you go to the doctor, you do everything the doctor says, and you get worse. There's something wrong with that picture.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
You're doing everything, and you start up one medicine, now you're on two, now you're on four. There's something wrong with that picture. And so we have to do our part, do our research, try to find out exactly what the problems are and what's the best way to approach it. We have to find a reason to live. Something to be excited about. You know, I go over what I call the four P's with my patients. What's your passion? God's purpose, a written plan, and the production of that plan. Those are the four P's. Because if you don't have that, you're not going to get well. You got to have a reason to live. If not, you'll have a reason to die.
Everybody, my special guest is Dr. Ted Watkins, MD. This has been a fabulous, fabulous show. And any closing remarks, Doctor? I mean, I appreciate your extending the time tonight for our listeners. Anything that we have not covered as it relates to the discussion that you'd like to sum up with tonight?
There's probably a lot of things that we can talk about. But the thing that I think is really critical is that we have to get excited about life. And we have to be willing to really take charge of our lives and not give your health over to somebody else. I tell my patients, I am not your boss. You pay me. I don't pay you. That makes you the boss.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But you gotta trust me. But check me out.
Right.
Go read. Find out what's happening. Don't just go talk to your neighbor who don't know nothing and who's dying themselves. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Find out people who are getting success. I only listen to people when it comes to my treatment regimens who are getting success. That stuff can sound so good, but if it ain't working, I don't want it.
Right.
And we have to become that way. And then the treatment becomes easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could generally give a person a treatment in 5 minutes, tell them what to do in 5 minutes to get rid of their cancer, but they'll never get well because they don't believe. They're not willing to act. So that's where we got to go. And that, to me, that's probably the most important thing. And then I'd be more than happy to come back when people are awake and we can, you know, get some questions and answer those questions for us. Because cancer truly is a killer. And we don't have to die from it.
Doctor, if you could please give your information again, your phone number, how people can reach you, because I know that there are going to be your phone should be ringing off the hook. Your office phone should be ringing off the hook right now. Can you give it again, please?
That number is 202-388-0992. 202-388-0992.
Everybody, I want to say thank you so much for your time. And as Dr. Watkins said, let's look at not just the diet piece. That's very important, high up on the list. But as Dr. said, stress, because the actual cancer could actually be brought on. The cancer could actually be a symptom of a deeper situation that's going on in your everyday life. There's some things going on in your personal life, things going on in your spirit, things going on in your soul. I mean, you know, that is manifesting, you know, as cancer. So we want to take a look at, you know, as Doc said, holistically look at our lives and see what's important to us, to see what changes we need to make and get with and the people that are having success in the area that we want to go in and listen. It's so important to listen to people that know. Like he mentioned, you can listen to your neighbor who's dying themselves, listen to your neighbor who says, oh, I know somebody that tried that and it didn't work, but your neighbor might have diabetes or high blood pressure. Your neighbor might need to go see a holistic doctor. Your neighbor might be on taking 7 pills, you know. So this show is for you, okay? You can't say that you didn't hear it. Now, what are you going to do? The choice is truly yours. And you can take Dr. Watkins' advice. I mean, you can call him or you can not call him. That choice is yours. But whatever you do, every choice that you make or every choice that you don't make is going to affect and impact your life. Again, I believe that you tuned in because either you or somebody that you know needs this information. So if it's not for you personally, then it's for somebody that you know. Share this link with somebody that you know. If it's not for you, share Dr. Watkins' telephone number with somebody that you know who needs to hear it. It could definitely be the answer to their prayers because, for sure, you did not hear this show by accident. I want to thank you for your time, Dr. Watkins. I appreciate you, my brother, for all of the work that you've done for so many years dealing with us. You know, it's not an easy job. We can be stubborn, you know. And so for all of the patients whose lives that you've touched, you know, from sharing this information from the people, the track record that you have, you know, you're helping to heal this planet one patient at a time. And I thank you, my brother, for all of your hard work and your patience with us. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
You're more than welcome. God bless.
God bless.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. I'll be in touch. Everyone, that was Dr. Ted Watkins. Make sure that you give him a call. If the show was not for you personally, it was for somebody that you know. My name is Jawanza, and I want to encourage you to listen to the archives. We've got an archives with, oh, my God, we've got everybody in there. I mean, if you want shows on spirituality, we've got shows with Owahehe Metarion Comet. We've got shows with Sekhmet Abnatar. We've got shows with Dr. Raul Nefer-Amen. We've got shows with Dr. Ruby Lathan. I mean, we've got shows with Coy Dunstan. I mean, you know, you want some entertainment, we've got Melba Moore in the archives. I mean, matter of fact, no, I'm not going to tell you yet. I got a surprise for you coming up. So I just, you know, make sure that you keep tuning in because I got a real surprise guest coming down the pike, and I know that you're going to really love her. So until the next time, everybody, my name is Jawanza. Thank you so much for your time. I truly know that you could be doing something else, and I am very, 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 did I say very? I am very happy that you took time out of your day to spend it with myself and Dr. Ted Watkins. Make sure you give him a call, okay? My name is Jawanza. Again, thank you so much for your time. Until the next time, peace and blessings. I love you too.